Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 15% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes, and TPU upper design allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, show jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, for 15% off a pair of Treks, use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com. I want to give a huge shout out and thank you to Conforge for sponsoring our sold out Humble Hoof Podiatry Clinic this October 2025 in Amesbury, Massachusetts. Conforge has a whole range of farrier products, everything from tools to impression materials, and I have been impressed by their quality and their reps that I've spoken to and their customer service. They will have a booth at our clinic, and you can also visit their website at conforge.com. That's K-A-H-N-F-O-R-G-E.com. I've most recently been using their dental impression material on a difficult case I have here on the farm, and I actually used one of their more firm dental impression materials to help prevent some rubbing from casting on this horse's heel bulbs, and it has held up really well and done a really great job. So thank you to Conforge for sponsoring the clinic. We all know that hoof health and soundness isn't just about what we do to the feet, and that's kind of what my entire podcast is about. Something I've wanted to talk about for quite some time, years actually, given the clients that I have that have struggled with it, is PSSM2, or what some now call MIM, or M-I-M, and how it affects a horse's soundness and their body and their hooves. I've had a few clients who have struggled with a horse that has this issue, a variant of PSSM, and they've just had such a hard time figuring out the puzzle pieces to getting these horses comfortable. So I reached out to Marion Otto, who I've seen give incredible advice in various PSSM groups, and I've had some clients actually work with her and seen really good success with their own horses. Marion is from Germany, and her passions have actually taken her into this more niche sector of equine nutrition. And she has worked for 6 years as an equine nutritionist and actually co-developed the first feed range for MIM horses in Germany in 2020. She has been instrumental in helping some of my clients figure out some of these tough cases. And I reached out to her to see if she would chat with me about what are these different variants that can affect horses of all breeds, and what can we do about it? How can we help these horses become more comfortable? So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in muscle issues in horses?
So it started completely on another end, maybe about me a little bit. I'm German. I'm 60 years old this year. And in a former life, I did a degree in law and had a career as radio and TV editor up to management. I'm on horseback for 50 years now. Mainly do dressage, did a little bit of jumping, and have a big love for hacking. I'm a horse owner for 30 years now with up to 8 horses at the same time. I did my basic trainer license 15 years ago. And that was when I needed to learn about equine nutrition, because that's included in German trainer licenses. And I am a small scale horse breeder for 10 years now and work as an equine nutritionist for 6 years.
Wow. So,
yeah.
And has your focus sort of shifted to these you know, muscle issues, or do you still kind of cover a lot of different nutrition aspects of feeding horses?
I do cover all aspects because people usually come to me, tell me my horse has MIM. That's what I'm known for, diets for MIM. And then I have to get down to the actual reason why the horse is not okay. And that very often is not MIM.
Wow.
So I really need to know all the nutritional stuff, naturally. And I have actually also clients with horses that don't have MIM. People come with horses with severe allergies, with insulin dysregulation, yeah, all kinds of metabolic issues, all kinds of myopathies. And sometimes I just get asked for training advice as well. I have clients, they come with a horse and tell me, my horse is MIM. Yes, it has some variants. But if I check the pictures of the horse, I see, okay, this horse has a dysfunctional thoracic sling. And the issue is not diet. The issue is training.
Wow.
So it is way a broader thing than equine nutrition, what I do. Nutrition is the biggest part of it, but I need to know much more about the stuff around. And muscle issues are only part of it.
And I'm so glad that you said MIM, because I've only read it and I've always just said MIM, but is it usually people read it as MIM?
Yeah, we call it MIM. It's the abbreviation now for muscle integrity myopathy. But I don't think that is what it will be called in the end. That is just an intermittent term they've chosen after they had to let go the idea that it was PSSM2.
Yeah, so that's what I've always, you know, I mean, granted, I haven't stayed up to date as much as I should on these kind of things, but I've always thought there's PSSM1 and then there's all these different variants of that. So I would love you to talk a little bit about what MIM is and how is that different from PSSM or MFM? And, you know, are these different variants, is one worse than another? How do they all kind of fit under these categories?
It's not that easy. It's relatively easy to say what PSSM is. At least PSSM1, we have a gene. We have distinctive patterns in tissue and in biopsies that match with the disease state of this gene. With MFM, it's already a bit more complicated. We have several known, most likely a load of not yet known genes. And we have a disease state in biopsies. But this disease state doesn't seem to be always on. We know of cases where horses were tested positive for MFM with a biopsy. And 1 or 2 years later, the same horse was biopsied again. And the biopsy wasn't interpreted as MFM again. It was negative. And you need to know a little bit about biopsies. Biopsies are subject to interpretation. So every lab would maybe see something different in a biopsy. But this was the same lab, well-known lab for biopsies. And you could think that this had the same guidelines for deciding whether you see MFM or not. So it's very likely that MFM might be a fleeting stage. A fleeting disease state could change depending on the damage that is actually there. And maybe there are even times where you don't see any damage at all, or at least not in these areas. We know from a broad range of biopsies done in Germany on horses with MIM variants that it isn't helpful to test always the semitendinosus or semimembranosus muscle, that are gluteal muscles. We see changes in muscles usually where the biggest impact is, the biggest load. And this might even be the shoulder area.
Wow.
So, or not the upper gluteal muscles, but the deep gluteal muscles. So this is something we should also have in mind if we judge biopsies. So in my opinion, a biopsy is just a disease state, not reliable for a constant disease, but just for the actual moment when it was taken, and maybe not even a distinctive statement about the disease at all, because maybe taken in the wrong place.
Interesting. And so I know that you mentioned biopsies, but is that the only way that we're diagnosing MIM or, you know, these kind of variants at this point?
The problem with MIM is we might not even be able to diagnose it by biopsy, at least not the way we are looking at biopsies right now. With MFM, we have well-described patterns that should appear. Same goes for PSSM1. PSSM2 is a little bit more a problem. After reading Wahlberg's latest research, my takeaway message was, we don't know what it is exactly, because neither enzyme patterns nor tissue patterns were distinctive throughout the different tested horses. So this is not clear exactly how PSSM2 should present in a biopsy or would present in a biopsy. With MIM, it's even more complicated. MIM is an umbrella term. We have 6 variants at the moment, and these variants are very, very different. We might see, if we go into the different variants, patterns of MFM at a certain stage, of LGMD, which is limb girdle muscle dystrophy, that is different kind of myopathy, affects different muscles or preferred different muscles. We might see patterns of vitamin E deficiency, and we might see patterns of compromised mitochondria. So for every variant, it's a little bit different what we might find if we would look for it, and that we haven't done in the past. We had concentrated on patterns for PSSM, because the idea was MIM is PSSM2, and PSSM2 is the same pattern like PSSM1, but without the GIST gene. And we had to put that concept into the bin and might have to look for different things. I have had biopsies on my table where I had MFM patterns, and I had biopsies on my table where I had mitochondrial damage or clustering, which was not compliant with a healthy state. And I had biopsies on my table that would have been LGMD or vitamin E deficiency. That's a bit different, difficult to say what you have there, because both can present with moth-eaten muscle fibers. And actually, they have different causes. So the look would be the same, but the cause would be different.
Interesting. And I know I've had a friend who has done a lot of the Equisec testing, because she's worked with a lot of horses that she had suspected had some kind of, had some, one of these variants. And I know that that's obviously different than the traditional like muscle biopsy approach to diagnosing these. So can you tell us a little bit about the Equisec test versus the biopsy?
The Equisec test is only a test for genes. Doesn't give any diagnosis about a disease state. It just says, okay, we have a defect gene there. The genes Equisec chose are genes that are usually myopathies in humans. There's one exemption, that is P4. P4 is not known in humans. I will come to that later. So that is what they actually did. They did transfer these genes and myopathies to horses. That's a bit complicated, because we usually can't do that viable, transferring genes from one species to another and say, okay, this is the same. But in my opinion, we have enough evidence that they are completely on spot there. That is my opinion. I think I had about 1,000 or more horses, not all as clients, but I do a lot of pro bono work in the different groups, and people send me their blood tests, or they post them and ask for opinion, and they describe the symptoms, and it very often comes down to the same symptoms and same blood test markers for certain variants. So what we have with Equifax is we have genes that are known for causing myopathies. We do not have matching biopsies right now because we haven't been looking for the right things, in my opinion. And we have distinct markers in blood tests that can be related with the MIM symptoms. So that is what we have with Equisec.
And can you have a result from Equisec that says that there's a specific variant, but have a horse that is asymptomatic?
Yeah, naturally. I think this applies to about 50% of all horses with variants. We have, I think, about with warm blood, is about 70 to 75% of horses that have one or more of these variants. And we have horses that stay asymptomatic their whole life. And we have horses that have only one variant and they totally break down. We have horses that have three variants and they are only lightly symptomatic. This has, in my opinion, to do with the characteristics of MIM variants. I have to create a bigger picture now. We had a very interesting research work 3 years ago published from Berlin University. They tested Arabians and Parbred Arabians at the European Endurance Championships. And they focused on unexplainable lamenesses after competition. They did blood tests before competition and they did blood tests after competition. And what they found, they did not do only the usual blood tests, but they tested for SOD, that is superoxidismutase. That is a bunch of enzymes that are involved in cell protection. And they found that the horses with the unexplainable lamenesses after competition did show already a low level of superoxidismutase up front to the competition. So the horses that got lame later had a lack of enzymes for cell protection up front. That's basically what you can take from this research. We have now to delve a little bit into superoxidismutase. Superoxidismutase is not one enzyme. It's a lot of different enzymes. But in cell protection, we have three main types of superoxidismutase. That is the manganese superoxidismutase, which is mostly involved in protecting the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell where the energy is generated. Then we have the zinc copper superoxidismutase and the iron superoxidismutase. And zinc copper and iron superoxidismutase protect the lipids and the proteins of the cells. So the scientists in Berlin deducted that not the enzyme is the problem, but the antioxidants the enzyme uses are the problem. And then they ruled out, consequently, iron, because iron, at least in our neck of the world, is never a problem. There is so much iron in diets that the enzyme will never run out of sources. That leaves actually manganese, zinc, and copper. And here comes the evidence I have for my patients, and not only I, but the vets I work with and some fellow colleagues as equine nutritionists. What we usually see is if a horse is symptomatic of MIM, they have low manganese levels. And if they have a muscle loss, they have low zinc levels as well. What MIM most likely is an inability to deal with oxidative stress on cell level. And when we go into the different variants, we have three variants where mitochondrial damage is already part of the variant. That is PX. PX is not actually a myopathy. It's a neuronal signaling disorder. But there's a lot of mitochondrial damage in the brain, or can be, not is, can be, because it's always can be. There is P2, which can present in two different forms, in SMFM or LGMD. In humans, with horses, I don't think we have solved whether it's connected to MFM or LGMD. And there's P8. That is a variant Dr. Walbach has already described as MFM in Arabians. She, in my opinion, had mixed up it with Rhea, which is another muscle disease. which is pretty common in Arabians, and a horse can have two kinds of myopathies at the same time. But we know that MFM in Arabians, which is exactly the features P8 pyroxide 1 has a glitch in the breathing chain of the mitochondria. So these are three kinds of variants which already have, on the first level, mitochondrial issues. We need to be careful there. When I say mitochondrial issues, I mean mitochondrial issues. It's not mitochondrial myopathy. That's something different. So it's complicated, but my opinion, and after the research work of Berlin University, I think it's a little bit backed, is what we deal with MIM is mitochondrial compromised muscles, and this will result in myopathies. So basically, it's mitochondrial caused myopathy.
Yeah. And so with all these different variants and kind of trying to distinguish between them, what are some symptoms that owners might see? You know, if a horse is in an episode, what might that look like?
I think it starts way before the horses go into an episode. An episode is a very hard thing with MIM. If you have mitochondrial damage, the first thing what you have is tiredness and an inability of the muscle to work to full power. And muscles will become hard if you work them anyway. So you overwork the muscle will become hard. So it might show first in a horse with a lack of energy, and a stiff horse might start with that. So mitochondrial damage is something which develops with age. That is completely normal aging process. But it can be introduced by stress. It can be introduced by disease, bacterial infection, viral infection. It can be introduced maybe by damaging the immune system. They have already a problem, because if you can't protect the cells sufficiently with antioxidants, you will have a compromised immune system as well. And from there, it can develop in different directions. If you have this compromised mitochondria and a slightly compromised immune response, every infection or stress event can add to the situation and might generate an additional need of proteins for protecting the muscle. And this will end, if you don't provide enough at that moment, this will end with muscle loss. The horse will start to use up its own muscles for surviving, for keeping the metabolism going, because it doesn't get enough nutritional proteins. That is what happens. So you start out with a stiff horse, which can have gait irregularities. You don't find any skeletal cause or physical cause by lameness examination. The lameness is intermittent, not every day. It might change. It might affect every other day another leg. So this is the second thing. You start out with stiff horse, then you have intermittent lameness episodes on different legs. You can't pin it down what is going on there exactly. Next thing would be muscle atrophies. And these can appear in very different places. Mostly they affect the top line and the hind, so the croup and everything, the later stage. But the majority of cases we deal with do not even have these muscle atrophies. They have just the lameness issues and a stiffness. And you can see rope walk, because if a horse is stiff and the muscles aren't loose, there might be tendencies to gait irregularities. That is one thing. What you might see is head shaking, because the horse is simply stiff over the whole top line, and this can affect the trigeminous nerve. Yeah, that's it basically. You might have horses that don't want to go forward, they refuse to go forward. Then what you have is, that is mainly with PX, you have a very spooky horse, very reactive horse. With pyroxide 1, P8, you can have a spooky horse if you don't provide enough vitamin E. Don't ask me how that is related, but we know that it is exactly like that. With the other most likely vitamin E deficiency, myopathy P4 in the Equisec panel, you don't have spookiness if you don't provide enough vitamin E. So there's something more with pyroxide, with P8. That's it. And the problem with all these symptoms is there could be any other disease as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too. And I know obviously you're talking a little bit about nutrition with that. And, you know, earlier you talked about iron and copper and zinc and manganese. And those are minerals that I'm focusing on a lot here at my property because I do hoof rehab, and copper and zinc especially are so important for hooves. And we do test our hay and balance it based on the iron amount. And often I have to add copper, zinc, and manganese. So those minerals are so important in hoof health. And it sounds like you're saying that, you know, these MIM horses might utilize these minerals differently. Do you see symptoms in these horses' feet at all?
Yeah, we see them. And I think most owners are not able to link them to MIM. I have a picture book case among my own horses. Quintello is now 16 years old. I have him for 12 years. And at age 6, he got a combo shot for flu and tetanus. And about 7 days later or so, he lost about 250 pounds of muscles. And he is my picture book case for mitochondrial issues and for protein need way over the usual protein need of horses. And he's also my picture case for hoof problems. He has a tendency for too long toe growth and for negative palmar angle. So we're constantly working to fix that. And as soon as he is too low in protein, he gets footy.
Interesting.
So he will be very sensitive walking over stones, or if just mud is clumped in his hoof, that can be too much pressure for him on the soles. And that is the sign that I have to look for the diet again and adjust proteins. That is one thing. He has a higher need of manganese as well. But this is for me not that visible. I'm living at the coast in Germany, and this coastal area is well provided with manganese in the soil. So we don't have that issue that much. But I see it that too much iron isn't even the issue, because we wouldn't have horses if it was the issue. We have iron overloads here all over Germany, 4 to 10-fold amount of iron that a horse would need alone in the hay. And most mineral balances add iron as well, which I don't understand, but different thing. But zinc and copper are vital. Also, the balance between zinc and copper. You naturally see that. And you see that not only in hoof quality, but also in the growth. It's my experience. If you don't provide enough of it, the horse has a tendency for negative palmar angle and an overlong toe. Somehow the structure just sags. The whole hoof structure. That is my experience. And Quintello is the one. He actually would have very nice hooves. I have all my horses on barefoot because they are not ridden at the moment. I don't have time for that. And we do have clay here for soil. So no rocks, nothing else. And they can easily all go barefoot. And with raising the protein amount in the diet, I had a really visible improvement in hoof quality. That is a really important thing. You see, a lack of protein is always visible in hooves.
Absolutely. And I've seen similar here too. I mean, I test my hay, so I know how much protein's in it. And I have had times where I've supplemented amino acids or the branched chain amino acids. And I've definitely seen a difference in the hoof quality as well. And so, you know, on top of looking at those nutritional aspects, is that the main way that we manage MIM to improve comfort and soundness? Are there other things that you do as well?
No, that is actually what makes it so difficult for the normal horse owner. These horses need a very careful management in several ways. That is riding and working them. They have longer warm-ups. The warm-ups need to focus more on stretching the muscles. So you need different kind of warm-up, lots of lateral work, bending, serpentine circles, everything, all in walk first, because they are not really good in trot work in the beginning. So this has to be adapted. You need to know a little bit about riding for doing lateral work. So someone who's a beginner and buys a horse might not be able to work it according to its needs. These horses are best out as much as possible, but some need also to be stalled under different circumstances. We have horses that are bivariant, very bad with tolerating wind and rain and cold. And so either you have a rug management, which is very fine-tuned, or you provide enough shelter so the horses can retire if the weather is too much for them. You need a very good hay quality. That is an increasing problem with climate change and droughts and floods and everything. Last year in Europe, it was a catastrophe because we had the whole summer over mostly rain and hay was cut very late, has too much raw fiber, not enough protein, and you really see it right at the moment. You have about 20% of horses that look awful because they didn't get enough protein over winter. And the owners don't know about the race needs and the horses didn't get more feed. We all wait for pasture time to fix this problem, because in some stables you just can't fix it. As another thing, you need a stable where you are allowed to adjust the management to the horse's needs, which can be a problem. Yeah, you have stables that just offer certain feeds, don't want owners to feed their own stuff, don't want to feed extra, or do not provide the right hay. But these horses can be a problem for an owner that isn't aware of the amount of management that accumulates to keep them going. The interesting thing is these horses with MIM variants usually perform better with professionals because they have all the management in place with walker in the morning, some hours on pasture, regular riding or lunging in the evening, high protein feeds, good supplements. They have a groom that is reliable for blanket changes and everything. So in professional hands, these horses are way easier to manage than for an amateur who has the horse in a livery yard or so.
Yeah, and I have one here that has had, you know, had a biopsy that was kind of equivocal, inconclusive, and we do treat him as if he has one of these variants, and it is a little bit more, I don't want to say high maintenance, but it is a little more high maintenance to kind of make all these adjustments, but it does seem to make a difference for him. So I definitely understand that, you know, some barns just won't or can't accommodate all those things, and finding a facility that can do that can be probably tricky for some owners, but it does seem like it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. And I'm often very sorry for the owners because they want to do their best and just the circumstances don't allow it. And then my job is to find some possibilities to work around. Main issue is often that you feed only once a day. Grain is fed only once a day, but it would be better to feed grain twice or three times a day because you need to add different supplements, which might not go along with each other, or amino acids. Then some barns have ad-lib hay excess, which can be detrimental for some variants because they have a tendency for obesity and insulin dysregulation. That is something what we know for insulin dysregulated horses already, or EMS horses, because that is just a subsection of MIM. MIM actually is not only a muscular problem, it's not only muscular issues. Every variant comes with a set of side effects, and these side effects can really be difficult.
Yeah, and in terms of, obviously, these horses need a lot of extra considerations, and owners are probably wondering, you know, how do they know if they're going to go out and get another horse that they're not going to end up with a horse that has this, or what if they want to be more aware so they can manage it better? Can you tell us a little bit about predisposition to having MIM or the genetics involved, and if there are certain breeds that we want to investigate further to see if they are MIM positive in that way?
As far as I know, there is no breed that doesn't have it.
Wow.
Or maybe draft breeds don't have it. That I have to exclude them because we do not have tested them completely. We usually find in draft breeds PSSM1 and Rea. I don't have an overview whether MIM variants are there prevalent. They might be, because these MIM variants I think they are very, very old. There are some breeds that are less affected because they don't have the full set of available variants at the moment available variants. What you can see is if you check the different breeds is that most likely MIM came into the breeds from horses which we call Arabian bloodlines. So this is park horses, barb horses, Arabs. Because all these horses usually have the full set of MIM variants. They don't have, not every horse has the full set, but in the breeds you find the full set. So this is most likely where the variants in the modern horses and breeds came from, influence from horses from the Arabian area and Asian area. That is where the influence came from. So we see a bunch of variants in Iberian horses. We see them in warm bloods. We see them in different pony breeds. We see them in thoroughbreds. We see them in Western breeds because they were all influenced by Arabian barb or targ blood. So what we should look for if we don't want to have too much complications is horses that are not hypermobile. We see in breeds with high mobility like a Spanish prey or a Frisian horse, we see bigger problems, bigger issues. That is because hypermobility has also other reasons, other collagen defects or skeletal issues. But breeds that are selected for a lot of mobility also carry a lot of myopathy variants. That is the variants that come with a collagen defect or with limb girdle muscle dystrophy, which is C8, which is K1, which is P4, and maybe P2 as well. So there's a reason why we have these problems right now. We have selected over decades for more mobility in the horse, more spectacular gaits, and these variants all added to that, or most of these variants added to that. PX, as mostly neural condition, has added something else. It has added spunk and reactivity. That is actually another reason why we have this variant so prevalent, because we want horses that are quick on the aids and reactive, and you need the neural conditions for being like that. And PX provides these neural conditions. That can be too much for normal people, but if someone goes on a 5-star jumping course or 5-star eventing course or wants a reining horse, which need to be very reactive, very quick, then this variant makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously a lot of those attributes are things that people think they want in a horse. They want these like flashy gaits and this big, beautiful movement. And so if somebody is going and looking for horses to buy or they're horse shopping and say they include some testing for PSSM or MIM on PPE and it came back positive, or would the ECOSEC test, if there was some evidence of the genes, would that be a horse that you would say to pass on? Or is there, you know, are these horses able to just be managed and go into competition?
I would make some differences between the variants, and I wouldn't make my decision based on the variants only. A horse is always a full package. So you have to see the complete health assessment. I sometimes advise clients on buying horses health-wise. And naturally, these clients come up with horses that have variants. I don't have a problem if a horse has PX or P8 or P2 or P3, because in my opinion, these variants are manageable. That is where the possibilities of the future owner come into the game. You have to be aware that they need management and you need a stable that allows certain kinds of management. So that is the first thing the owner should ask himself. Am I able to work these horses appropriately? Can I offer a management that keeps these horses in shape? Second is I would pass on every horse that has major scattered issues. That is way more important than MIM. MIM alone isn't detrimental. What is detrimental is a sum of different health issues and MIM on top. And that is what vets hear that are breeders as well and that have researched with MIM also say. They say, okay, we can deal with MIM, but the issues normally arise if you have skeletal problems conformation issues, major conformation issues that put different loads on certain areas of the muscles. And then the problem adds that the muscle has an issue with fighting oxidative stress and overload. So MIM alone would mostly not be an issue where I decide against a horse. I have two clients that have bought horses, one with P8 only, the other one with P3 only. Both clients had MIM horses before. They were aware of the issues and the requirements of these horses. And they have these horses and they manage them according to their genetics. And it works fine. And I would make one exception. If somebody would offer me a horse with P4, I'd chicken out. Why? P4 is a variant that comes with an inbuilt tendency for insulin dysregulation and obesity.
Oh.
So these horses can perform up to Grand Prix, no problem, but they need a really stringent management, a very tight management, not too much food, enough work, hay with not too much sugar. The usual amateur who throws his horse on the pasture might just run the horse into the ground.
Yeah.
If we have horses that have to be euthanized, P4 is often a reason. And this is not because of the horse, actually. That is because of inability to manage the horses properly.
That makes sense. Yeah, and obviously this is such a huge topic, and I feel like we could do a deep dive into each one of these questions and symptoms and variants. So, you know, we're kind of running out of time to talk about all of them, but if owners wanted to look into more information, where would they go to kind of learn more and explore more of this?
Equisec has on each variant a genetic description and some informations about the damage that come with the gene to the muscle. That is one thing. That is a good source. I would also recommend to check if they have the knowledge and to deal with it, what these genes actually mean in humans, because most of the damage that is in humans is interestingly also in horses. One client with P3 horse went into the groups for humans with the same kind of myopathy. That's a Myos 3 myopathy. And no, it's a FLNC, Phelamin C myopathy. And the humans with this kind of myopy reported that they can't stand humid cold. That is exactly what we see in horses with P3. They can't stand humid cold. You have to blanket them if it's under 20 degrees Celsius. Sorry, I don't know. Fahrenheit degrees.
That's under 68 degrees Fahrenheit. Wow, that's pretty warm.
Yeah, that's pretty warm. But you need to provide them with a light blanket, the P3 ones, because they just can't stand wind and they can't stand rain and they can't stand humidity. If they are confronted with that, they get so stressed out, they get digestive problems. they are prone to developing gut inflammation. That has to do with the protein, which is replaced in a certain set, they get lysine and should have glutamine. And this pattern affects the gut lining. And we know from humans that the microvilli in the gut of people that have a tendency for inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, show a lack of glutamine and serine and a third amino acid in the microvilli of the gut. So that is very interesting because the genetic problem we see in the P3 horses, the replacement of this one amino acid, could be the reason for IBD in the end.
Wow.
Because it might have an impact on the combination of amino acids in the microvilli in the gut.
That's so interesting.
It's just might. Yeah, I have the evidence that these horses have more often gut inflammation than other horses because my data tell me that. And I had to look into why that was. And Equisec provided the information that one variant of P3, there are actually two, had this replacement of this amino acid. And the research in humans provided the information that we have different amino patterns in microvilli with people with IBD. There might be a second reason that it has to do something with heat shock proteins and discarding damaged proteins, which makes also a big part of construction of the gut lining, heat shock proteins. But more likely is the replacement of this one amino acid, and that this extends to the gut lining. That is P3. And the interesting thing is a subset of P3 that doesn't have these issues. And this is most likely the second variant of P3. They do not have these problems with temperature regulation. They do not have these problems with gut. And that is what we often find in thoroughbreds and in Western breeds. They are less or otherwise affected than warm bloods or riding ponies.
Wow, yeah.
It's absolutely fascinating. But when Equisex says, okay, we have two different sets of P3, two sub-variants, it makes sense that we see different symptoms.
Right. Yeah, and obviously it's just such a huge topic, and I haven't even begun to explore all of it because there's so much that I think goes into about all the different ones and managing them. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing some resources and information today. And I'm sure that there'll be people that would love to reach out to maybe consult with you. And is there a way that they can get in touch?
Mm-hmm. I have my Facebook profile, which is Feed Healthy. You will find there descriptions for some of the variants. I haven't written the descriptions for all yet. I think P8 is still missing, and K1 and P2. But I do post there from time to time about management of these horses and how to diagnose it or how to check for different diagnoses that might show the same way. Because there is lots which looks like MIM and isn't MIM, starting from gut inflammation as an own disease. Over skeletal issues like ECVM. We have, especially in Europe, problems with anaplasmosis and babesiosis that could actually look like MIM. So there's a lot of, and actually other myopathies as well. There's absolutely no reason that a horse shouldn't have a MIM variant and suffer from another myopathy.
Right.
So even sometimes biopsies make very much sense.
That makes sense, yeah. Awesome. And so it's Feed Healthy Marion Otto is the Facebook page, correct?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Feed Healthy.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much. I know that there's even more to discuss, but this is, you know, such great information for people to kind of start. And I really appreciate you being willing to chat with me today about this.
I'm sorry. I could talk hours about that.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. And honestly, I would love if we can do another episode where we can dive a little deeper into maybe some specific ones or get a little bit more specific about even management and things like that. Because I think there's just so much that we can't even cover in one episode.
No, and the actual variants are so different from each other. They are an own topic.
Absolutely.
So it's just that if you think your horse is MIM, my advice is to check out first every other possible diagnose that would come with the same variants and see MIM just as a fallback. That is my advice, because there are so many things that can show the same way with atrophies, with stiffness, with lameness, and even with intermittent lameness on different feet where you can't localize where the problem is. I think the most distinctive thing is if you have manganese levels in bloods that are beyond lower than 1.6 or 1.7 microgram. If you have lower values there, MIM adds to the symptoms.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because these manganese values are a sign for compromised mitochondria if you feed according to the guidelines. I have sometimes clients that come that do not feed a balancer at all, and the blood work shows. So then it's not reliable. But if you feed according to the guidelines and you have low manganese level, you have a MIM issue.
Interesting. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much. I really appreciate your time on this.
Thank you very much, Alicia. It was a pleasure.
Have a great rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person. And chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.